Today on Jay Sekulow Live, special in-studio guest, Sean Spicer, former White House press secretary for President Trump, will be joining us right here in the studio on Jay Sekulow Live, and our special advisor for national security and foreign policy, Rick Rennell, on Twitter and Facebook, censorship, and how the government is now taking action. We'll talk about that and more today on Jay Sekulow Live.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
Welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. Folks, we are taking your phone calls, too. 1-800-684-3110. Obviously, we are now way under 3 weeks. Less than 3 weeks before the election, early voting beginning all across the country. I drove in, saw the lines of people doing early voting. And, of course, in some states there's mail-in voting and there's issues with that. So I think it's a great time to have a very special guest in the studio with us, not just joining us by phone, but right here in the studio with me. And that is Sean Spicer, the former White House press secretary. Sean has a new book out. It's called Leading America. Sean, thanks so much for being here with us in the studio.
I'm glad to be here. It's impressive. You have to come to the mothership to see it all and understand how impressive this place is and what you guys are doing. So,
you know, Sean, usually we get to see each other through camera. I look at you through there, and when I'm on your show on Newsmax, which is great. This is your second book. We've only got 3 minutes. This is kind of the first segment. We'll get into it more in the second segment. But tell people about why you chose to write Leading America, President Trump's Commitment to People, Patriotism, and Capitalism. It's out now. You get on Amazon. Is that where, you know,
it is. Yep. Amazon, place Amazon, like that? SeanSpicer.com, everywhere. I literally just signed books here in the Nashville area. So, you know, wherever you buy them. But, you know, I wrote it because I think that people need to understand what we're up against. We talk about it a lot as conservatives, but when you look at big tech, when you look at Hollywood, when you look at media, when you look at academia, and you understand the totality of how the left is pervaded through all these institutions and the level of indoctrination that exists in each one of them, I look at people and I say, when you read this book, you're going to have several aha moments. You're going to go, now I get why journalists are the way they are. You're going to get why the media happens. For everyone who watched that New York Post story this week happen and get censored, this explains why. It explains the headwinds that everybody faces on the right, in big tech, and in the media.
You actually have a chapter in the book, an entire chapter in the book, and this is someone who would know about, obviously, because he's been dealing with the press throughout his career in politics, called Tech Tyrants Versus Trump. I mean, and now we've just seen it come to full fruition in the last few days.
You know, when you go to publish a book, and I know you've done it, but you never know what the environment is going to look like when it actually hits shelves. I couldn't have timed this better, because what has happened in the last 96 hours has been unbelievable. These two town halls last night, watching one side get beach balls and the other side get thrown hard balls, the moderator debating Trump in a town hall. But as you pointed out, this censorship that exists, the reaction of the media, the fact checkers, all of this is covered in the book. And the beauty of it is that if you sit back and go, I can't believe this is happening, it explains why.
Well, you know, I think that with the news even that's come out too about the C-SPAN, Steve Scully, he was going to moderate a presidential debate, Sean. I mean, you've been involved in that, and I've been involved in the prep for presidential debates before for candidates. The fact that he was going to moderate a presidential debate and he was lying about his Twitter account being hacked and trying, how do I respond to the president about the fact that I was a an intern for Joe Biden? Seems like maybe I'm not the right guy. And then he just, instead of saying he did send the tweet and maybe it was inappropriate, he lied and said he was hacked. And now,
I stood up for him. I've known Steve a long time.
Yeah.
When he said to me to my face, I'm sorry, I'm the kind of person that when I know you and you tell me something, I believe it. And I stood up for him and I'm disappointed in
those
actions.
It just says, even down to C-SPAN. It's like it's just kind of absurd.
How pervasive it is. Yeah. That's the problem.
Now, the book again, folks, it's Leading America. It's out now. President Trump. It's Commitment to People, Patriotism, and Capitalism. Again, SeanSpicer.com, Amazon.com. We'll talk about this a lot more with Sean when we come back. We've got him for another segment in the studio with us on Jay Sekulow Live. If you've got questions for Sean, get him in now. 1-800-684-3110 about his new book, Leading America. But let me encourage you, you need to go out and get this book, folks. As we're getting close to Election Day, it's time to understand just everything we're up against. We'll be right back on Jay Sekulow Live.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
We have guests on the broadcast throughout the week, but usually we don't have guests on about books. We usually get right to the issues, and we have them on because they're specialists. But there are certain individuals who both have that knowledge to bring you, but also have written books that are very important for you, especially our audience. And again, if you're just joining us, Sean Spicer, the former White House press secretary, is in studio with us today. So not just joining us by phone or via Skype. And Sean, it's great to actually see you and have you in here. You've got a new book out. I want to just tell people, in case they missed the first few minutes of the broadcast, it's your second book. It's called Leading America, President Trump's Commitment to People, Patriotism, and Capitalism. It's out now. People go, you said you went by Barnes & Noble near our studios and signed books just before being here. Yep. It's out, so you can go to the... If you're in a place where the bookstores are open, you go buy it at the bookstore. If you want to order it online, SeanSpicer.com, Amazon, the normal places. So this is your second book.
Yep.
Now, it's interesting. Since leaving as White House Press Secretary, you've done Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah, okay, that's chapter two, by the way.
Chapter two, so that's there. I mean, you can't ignore that. Certainly, I think that by being by being President Trump's first White House Press Secretary, the notoriety that came with that, just the fact that, you know, whether it's Saturday Night Live, whether it's nice, whether it's mean, but it's just, it had to be very unique because both of us have been in politics before, and yet people inside the Beltway knew who the press secretary is usually.
Right.
But
get outside
the Beltway.
Yeah.
And maybe a few people really into it. But that's about it.
You're right. You know, and then you were forgotten, right? While you were doing your press briefings on C-SPAN 1 or 2,
yeah.
People knew who you were if you're a political junkie. And it was fascinating. And you and your dad know this well because it's the same thing that the Trump world has put a whole new brand on people that surround the president and made them household names in a way that I never, ever thought. I joke with people, Jordan. When I spent 6 years at the RNC, I probably did 500 television appearances, and the closest I ever got to being recognized was in the sweater section of the Joseph A. Banks in Alexandria, Virginia.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it wasn't even by name. The guy was like, hey, aren't you a Republican?
Yeah, so, yeah, no, that happens. That's, you know, it happens all the time. I mean, that's the kind of normal. People think, wow, if you're on TV, everybody must know you're on TV. I mean, to actually notice the person, to have that kind of ability to be able to spot them like that, that people always get like, I kind of feel like, do I know you? How do I know you? Stuff like that. But things have had to change significantly for you. And so you've gotten this new experience, not only with Dancing with the Stars, but now you are back in studio hosting your own show on Newsmax. Now you're asking the questions and kind of directing the topics. And I love being on the broadcast. It's a great show. I actually, folks, I think it's similar to our show. It gives time to actually get into the issue you care about, instead of just 3-minute sound bites from two people yelling at each other debating. So you can, you, if you're a conservative, it's a great place to go to get the extra info so that you're more prepared and understand more. But tell people about the book. So to write a second book and after doing a first one, you knew what you were getting yourself into.
Right.
But then during COVID too. But what will people learn in this book?
It's a great question because I think it depends on what you care about. But as I said at the beginning, I think it gives you a sense of what headwinds conservatives are up against in all of the major institutions and why. And the thing is, in each chapter and in each part, I talk about a way in which conservatives are winning. And so, for example, I talk about what's going on in both K through 12 education, which is eye-opening to say the least in some of the courses, topics, and policies that are being pushed on little kids. But then I talk about college, right? And so I take an example of Turning Point USA, which Charlie Kirk is running,
right,
and talk about how they're combating the liberal ideology that's going on there and exposing people to conservatives. And so I go through Hollywood, I go through journalism, and talk about outlets that are giving rise to alternative voices like you're doing, like I'm doing on Newsmax, and saying, see, there are ways that we can fight and win and get the word out. Because what liberals fear most, I've come to realize, is not conservative. It is being exposed to conservative values and policies and principles, because they know that they're common sense. And so what they try to do is cancel out, shut out, and shout down any element of conservative thought or discussion because they know they'll lose.
You know, this is a key point because we are literally living it right now. So, and as you said, Sean, there's sometimes you write a book and it hits right at that moment. I think yours did, because we are literally have the Senate Judiciary Committee is planning to subpoena the CEO of Twitter. A person you know well, Rick Grenell, who's a special advisor to us, the ACLJ, he got blocked from Twitter last week over sharing his friend's parents, the live ballots that showed up to his friend's parents who had been deceased for 10 years. And they blocked him saying he, you know, some kind of voter fraud thing. And he was trying to show that actually this is the problem with voter fraud. You know, eventually it gets resolved, but he's Rick Grenell. For a lot of people, they're not Rick Grenell. And
the former director of national intelligence.
Right,
this isn't like some fringe guy.
Right. And so can he get it fixed? Yeah, but after days.
Right.
I mean, days. He's got like a million Twitter followers. This is, to me, it just came at the right time. And now finally.
But Jordan, think about this. They locked Kayleigh McEnany's account for sharing a story
from a news
from
outlet.
A publication that is the longest serving publication in America, founded by Alexander Hamilton.
Yep.
They blocked her account for sharing a story, not for editorializing it, not for giving her opinion, not for spending, for literally sharing something that, by the way, those same journalists for 3 years have been talking about how we can't silence the press. We've got to stand up for the media, except for when that story doesn't benefit the left.
Right. I mean, the hypocrisy is unbelievable here. You know, that's why I said you don't have to get into the story, true or not. More research has to be done, more facts need to come out. But no one should be banned from any kind of outlet that allows people this kind of freedom to post. And there's rules that, of course, in laws, I don't want to get deep into that now, but they will in the Senate Judiciary Committee.
But here's the thing, Jordan.
But they stop people from posting a news source. I mean, not fringe either.
Right.
New York Post suddenly becomes banned on Twitter. That's what we've come to.
But how ironic that we're having this discussion with you here in a place that you guys fight for law and liberty and all these things. And yet the reason that Twitter can do this is because a section of the Federal Decency Act, Section 230, which treats media organizations different. It gives these social media platforms the ability to do this with immunity. So they can attack you, they can block you, they can shut you down, and you can't do a thing. Whereas if the Washington Post or the New York Times or someone else sort of came after you or said malicious or untrue things, you could sue them.
Right.
You can't do that with them.
No.
We need to repeal that.
The FCC did announce yesterday that Ajit Pai, the chairman there, he said they are going to rewrite that. They're going to do a review and a new interpretation. I think you're probably right. Probably has to go further. But that's been the problem, is we let these companies kind of start out, and there was kind of no rules, and no one, and everybody joined.
There was some understanding and sense as to why it was done. Now, I think that the idea that we're almost into 4 years of President Trump's, we have an FCC, a Federal Communications Commission that he controls, and we're still talking about what should be done is ridiculous. We need action, and we need action now.
Yeah. So in your book, people are going to learn all about this.
Yeah. But that's the thing is that you obviously understand all this. This is what you guys fight here all the time. For a lot of people, they sit there and say, I don't get it. Why? And the point is, we need to understand and be equipped with the tools to fight and win. And understanding the problem is half the battle. Understanding why a journalist acts the way they do. When you read the chapter on journalism school and understand what they get taught by who they get taught and the material, you get it. And you go, now I understand why they act the way they do.
You know, you even talk about this. This keys in onto everybody listening to this broadcast right now, because Chapter 8 is called, it's titled Grade Schools as Battlegrounds. So I want to start there, because we've got a lot of audience, of course, with young kids. We got a lot of grandparents listening right now. Everybody's nervous about that, because they're seeing a lot more about what their kids are being taught because of these Zoom classes, too. They're starting to they're learning a lot more. But you're saying even like at the grade school level, this is a battleground.
Oh, we're talking second, third, fourth, fifth grade. Now, here's the thing. I detail this, and I learned a lot writing this chapter. There's a school not far from where I live in Virginia that gives kids the day off to go protest, to protest climate change. Okay. Now, I write this in the book. I'm not here to argue about the causes, but take out climate change and insert a Right to Life march.
Right.
Would you feel the same if that was happening? And I would argue that most liberals probably wouldn't.
No.
And but the idea is, we're falling behind in STEM education, in science and math. And instead of teaching the kids and trying to catch them up on reading and writing, arithmetic, foreign languages, science, we're sending them out into the world and saying, take a day off and go protest a cause that we at taxpayer-financed school is going to tell you which causes are good and bad.
I want to close with this, because you get into higher education as well, the journalism school. So for parents, grandparents out there, if it's a student who's interested in that, you need to learn, you need to get this book so you understand what's specifically happening in these journalism schools as well. Because again, you're getting this from someone who's lived it. I mean, Sean's lived it, and this is, he's still living it. But your first chapter, we got a minute left with you today, Sean, in the studio, and it's great to have you here. Is 2020 the battle for the soul of America? You know, oftentimes people say this election is the most important ever, but a lot of us do see, I mean, maybe it's, you know, Judge Barrett's confirmation, 3 Supreme Court justices by President Trump, the circuit courts, the wars that have been ended or are coming to an end. But why do you believe that?
Because if you look at what a Harris-Biden administration is going to do to this country, there's no way Biden can win and not take the Senate. And if you understand what 2 years unfettered liberal policies would do to this country, that's everything for us. And we haven't been able to unwind Obamacare. Can you imagine what 2 years of them passing all of these liberal Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Bernie Sanders policies would do? Not going to be able to turn the clock back.
All right, so folks, the book Leading America, President Trump's Commitment to People, Patriotism, and Capitalism. This is, again, it's Sean Spicer's brand new book out this week. You can get it at SeanSpicer.com, Amazon, wherever books are sold. He was just signing them across the street at Barnes & Noble. We'll be right back. It's great having you, Sean.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. We are taking your phone calls too, 1-800-684-3110. Working on connecting with our special advisor, Rick Rennell. But great to have Sean Spicer in the studio with us, folks. As you can tell, as we're getting close to Election Day, we're trying to bring you just the best coverage possible, best guests possible, best analysis possible on the issues that people that you care about, whether it's like in Sean's book, getting ready for what we already are seeing, the avalanche coming at, not just, by the way, not just the president, but all conservatives and conservative speech. And we're seeing it happen all across the country. If you want to give us a call, too, I want to get your thoughts on this. Yes, Sean was talking about how important this election site this is. And I think, you go back in history, there are certain elections that are going to be bellwethers about where the country goes. So the last election was more, are you going to continue with kind of the Obama style of politics with Hillary Clinton? Are you going to continue those kind of policies? In this election cycle, I think it's the opportunity where America has seen something very different. You've gotten to see a different leader who makes decisions in a different way. And I think that have been overwhelmingly great, but for our economy, dealing with a pandemic, dealing with all those issues. But of course, he's very divisive right now, and it will all become more divisive because that's how politics, unfortunately, is in our country right now. But on a second point that I do want to make is that I think when you go to the second level of issue, which is what Sean was talking about, is that if we allow this to continue, if we go back to the Obama days and we don't move forward using the Make America Great Again movement to continue it, we're going to be right back where we were. And guess what? Twitter, they're not going to be being called to testify, their CEO. He's not going to be subpoenaed. They're going to continue to love to shut down conservative speech. And Rick Rennell, our special advisor for national security and foreign policy, is joining us right now on Jay Sekulow Live. And Rick, I know you are traveling the country. I see you were here. You've been in, I think, probably two other states probably since you've been here. I want to ask you this because you, as and you talked about it before, but you were blocked from Twitter over something. I think even again, it was so absurd. It was just as absurd as someone being blocked for sharing a news article from a major news outlet.
Yeah. Look, we're in a real dangerous situation here, Jordan, because what we have is a situation where big tech is, during an election, literally playing politics. There's no other way to say it. This is only happening to conservatives. So if they really did have this community policing standard and they wanted to fact check everything, why aren't they doing it with Joe Biden? Why aren't they doing it with liberals? Why didn't they do it when the New York Times illegally got Donald Trump's taxes? There are a whole bunch of issues here that show the hypocrisy of big tech. And I think that's where the Republicans are having the biggest problem. We don't mind having standards that we disagree with. We don't always like it, but if they're applied to be, if they're applied equally to both parties, then I think we can live with it. But we really don't have that. Big tech has become part of the big media of Washington, D.C., which we know is totally biased.
No, absolutely. I mean, we see that Steve Scully. I mean, the fact, Rick, that because you were in the press world before you kind of, and it was a foreign policy world too, but at the United Nations, and the fact that someone who was going to moderate, and we wouldn't have known at this point, all the info that's now come out, a presidential debate, and it's a C-SPAN guy. I mean, you would think that of all the people, yeah, they're probably left-leaning, but they're the kind of most dry and just kind of answer questions, whatever. He said these weird tweets came out. He was trying, you know, contacting people like Scaramucci and say, how should I respond to Trump? And we think that's because he was, of course, like everybody in Washington media, he interned for Joe Biden. He's a Democrat. So how should I respond to Trump? And then he said he was hacked. Now it's come out. He lied about all the times he said his Twitter account was hacked, Rick, and that all those statements were his. And he was going to moderate that. We would not have known that because Washington media stood up for him. C-SPAN stood up for him. So that debate could have gone on, but for the COVID. And this is a guy who was literally lying about his Twitter account, and the mainstream media bought it, even though it sounded ridiculous.
Yeah, look, we're lucky that we got this trip up from Scully because, let's be honest, the debate commission came out and said, we researched this issue, we've looked into it, and our debate moderator is not biased. We had the debate commission tell us a falsity. First of all, they didn't check. They didn't go through the research. And they didn't try to see if Scully was lying. They just took his position and said, we researched it. He was hacked. So I would like the debate commission. Here's something that we should pursue. We should demand that the debate commission come clean and tell us what they did to go through the process to tell the country in the middle of a debate that their debate moderator was absolutely hacked and is not biased, because that's what the chairman came out and told us. And so for me, this is the problem of Washington, D.C. You and I have talked about this before. Yes. We don't have a fight between Republicans and Democrats. We have a fight between the insiders in Washington, D.C., which I would put the debate commission and Republicans and Democrats and a whole bunch of insiders, versus the rest of America. Why is it that the New York Times didn't launch an immediate investigation of Scully's Twitter habits, why he was talking to only left-wingers, why he was asking for advice from the left during the debate on how to deal with Trump? All of these issues should have been subjects that our media in Washington, D.C. were interested in, except they weren't interested in it because they protect their insiders. Another example of the inside versus the rest of America.
Well, and Rick, you know, we only got about a minute and a half left, but it's even happening with this Hunter Biden story. And, you know, facts keep coming out about it, and everybody, there's a lot more that needs to be looked at. Usually the media, they would also be doing that. But they all rushed to this conclusion this can't be true. And even if there is a laptop, that's wrong. Even though these are the guys who love protecting confidential sources, people who leak classified information, they got no problem with that. But it, again, legacy media, that mainstream world, really doesn't care about all those rights when it's not benefiting their cause.
Yeah, and you want to know, I just have personal experience with this. A group of reporters who are some of the worst are the national security reporters in Washington, D.C. Many of them are just blatantly political reporters. Greg Miller from the Washington Post last night, you know, immediately comes out with this story saying that Rudy Giuliani was compromised and the intelligence community knows it and this is all Russian propaganda. That is not true. That is not true. Unverified intelligence is not something that you should be reporting on like that. We must only have verified intelligence, and we get a whole bunch of information unverified, and it's reckless.
It is extremely reckless to call people that, to call things when it's unverified and wrong. Great to have you, Rick. We'll talk with you soon.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
All right, folks, so what a first half hour. You know, there are not many broadcasts that can bring you live. Sean Spicer in the studio, and their special advisor for national security and foreign policy, Rick Rennell, former cabinet member of President Trump's, former U.S. ambassador to Germany. Back-to-back, this close to the election. So and that was just the first half hour of the broadcast. And now I want to start hearing from you, too, 1-800-684-3110. Because both, both Sean and Rick discussed this censorship, the media, the way they are acting, and Sean's, and we're talking about Sean Spicer. I know that people hear from Sean from us that may think Hannity, but no, this is Sean Spicer, they talk about 47 U.S. Code Section 230 protection for private blocking and screening of offensive material. And how the internet, basically that these companies are exempt from the kind of rules that actually would govern any kind of normal outlets, and so that can't censor, that get in trouble for censorship. That would lose licensing and things like that, because that's what the FCC does. It's the idea that, and this is from Ajit Pai, who's the FCC Commission Chairman. He said, social media companies have a First Amendment right to free speech, but they do not have a First Amendment right to a special immunity denied to other media outlets, such as newspapers and broadcasters. So if they are, in fact, if now these social media companies, in a sense, have become, should they be treated more like media outlets, like newspapers and broadcasters, and not just like social media, because remember when it started, social media was like friends and family, and it started in colleges with like Facebook, but Twitter certainly. Celebrities use it for other things, but Twitter specifically and some of those other social services, Facebook, and there's always new ones popping up, but Facebook as well, especially the Facebook pages, like how the official ACLJ page, the official Jay Sekulow page, where if people are watching this broadcast right now, if you're not listening to the broadcast on radio, you're probably watching it there. So in a sense, that's become, it's different. It's not just all about, I've got your personal Facebook page or my Twitter account, I just talk back and forth with my friends and we comment. No, I mean, it's very much Twitter is a breaking news source. In fact, Twitter oftentimes, before you even get the notice on your phone that their breaking news has happened, Twitter's got it there first, and certainly before a website has it. So if you weren't watching the news at that moment, where they may have it at the same time, where they can kind of orally report to people, you actually could find it on Twitter oftentimes faster than you might even get a notification if you have those set up. So the FCC has announced that they are going to review how they interpret this section 230 specifically, and while the elected officials have to actually change the law, the FCC can interpret and has the legal authority to interpret Section 230, and they are going to do a new rulemaking to clarify its meaning. So this is very important. Now it has to be seen, you have to see this through to get it done. And I think that's very important to talk about. It's 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. When we come back, we'll take more of your phone calls on Jay Sekulow Live. I'll get into politics as well, but this censorship issue. How concerned are you about it? How concerned are you about Twitter deciding what news people can and can't read? And we're not talking about like random person's blog here. We're talking about New York Post. Talking about big mainstream news outlets. And again, shutting it down. Blocking you from your account. Blocking you from sharing it. And this is just news. News oftentimes does not end up being the fact. They report things that are alleged. All the time you'll read that in news articles. Most of the time things are alleged to have happened. Or may have happened, or it appears. They use that language because they're trying to get you information and sorting through it at the same time. We'll be right back on Jay Sekulow Live.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. We're about to get to your phone calls now, 1-800-684-3110. Of course, you had the competing town halls last night. That alone is a lesson in just the fact that on one town hall, it's, I was talking to Sean before we were on the air. It's not even softballs. It's literally beach balls being tossed softly to Joe Biden. I mean, so like a light little beach ball, not even a softball, which, you know, is actually, is easier to catch maybe, but I mean, beach balls is what he used the term. And here's why. You had a former Obama administration speechwriter as one of the questioners at the ABC town hall last night. You also had a questioner who is tied to a Democratic politician in Pennsylvania. So one of the speaker questioners at the ABC event with Joe Biden was Nathan Osborne, a former speechwriter for the Obama White House. He worked for public affairs, the Commerce Department. I mean, his profession, ABC said he was in communications, but this was someone who got to question Joe Biden at a town hall that was supposed to be like undecided voters, people who hadn't decided. It was literally someone who worked in the administration he was the vice president of. But that wasn't it. Another question at the town hall was a guy named Mike Heck, who the ABC presented as a physical therapist. Okay, this is interesting because you start looking through all this, folks, and you realize what everything we were talking about, it's real. He is the husband of or the wife of Ezra Naines, a high profile Democrat in Pennsylvania who ran a campaign in 2018. Challenging the state majority leader. I mean, this is like, it goes on and on. This is who got to question Joe Biden. Now, if you watched, Savannah Guthrie, she's like screaming at President Trump. And I think President Trump did a great job when he was talking to the actual people. But could you imagine that that NBC would have loaded up the questioners as people who formerly worked for President Trump or that were Republicans or that were Trump supporters and they just gave them another title? This is what we're talking about, folks. The media is against us. We know that, but they are stooping to some new lows now. I mean, to some new lows. Now, George Stephanopoulos, I will give him credit for this one question. He really pushed Biden on court packing, and Biden finally really did give the answer. He says now, and you'll hear it there, that He will give an answer on whether or not he supports it before Election Day. Of course, he also keeps saying all the time that people are already voting, so there shouldn't be a Supreme Court nominee going forward. So since people are already voting, Joe, why not just tell people now so they can know that as they go in maybe to early vote? But anyways, take a listen, because Steph Alpes really pushed him on it.
If they vote out before the election, you are open to expanding the court?
I'm open to considering what happens from that point on.
You know, you said so many times during the campaign, all through the course of your career, it's important to level with
the American
people.
It is, but George, if I say, no matter what answer I gave you, if I say it, that's the headline tomorrow. It won't be about what's going on now, the improper way they're proceeding.
But don't voters have a right to know where you
stand?
They
do have a right to know where I stand, and they'll have a right to know where I stand before they vote.
So you'll come out with a clear position before Election Day?
Yes.
So he says he will come out with a clear position before Election Day on court packing. He says people do deserve to know. This is because, of course, he was asked by a reporter. He's trying to kind of push back, and we played it, of course, one times when he said the voters don't deserve to know. That was his response. They don't deserve to know. The questioner said, don't voters just deserve to know your position on this? And he said, no, they don't. So the but this was his time to kind of try to pull that back, because it's in political ads, of course, across the country. But then he kind of, this is where I think he's saying, basically, let me interpret it for you. This is the Jordan Secular interpretation of rambling Joe Biden, who, you know, just a week ago said Americans don't deserve to know. So you see, he puts his finger in the wind. Do you want to go back to that kind of politician? Just think about it. The finger in the wind type, which, people didn't like what I said there, so I'm going to say the opposite. But he says it's going to depend on how the Barrett nomination goes. Well, let me tell you, folks, unless something wild happens that you'd have to, I can't even think of yet, like some crazy thing, we'd just be making up hypotheticals. She's on track to be confirmed. So he's saying, I think, that if she gets on the Supreme Court and he wins the election, and he's going to supposedly announce this before, but so it'll be, if she gets on to the Supreme Court, he would support court packing by Democrats. My question to him back to that would then be, well, if President Trump wins and the Senate remains Republican, and maybe the House gets a little closer, and then maybe it gets a little bit, maybe the House goes Republican totally this cycle, maybe it goes next cycle. Still feel that way about court packing? Because you want the... President Trump to add 3 more, 4 more, 5 more. I mean, you see where he's going to be in trouble. His base wants him. He's basically telling his base, I'll support it, I guess, because they're going to push through Barrett. But you see what the precedent he's setting is exactly what Harry Reid did when the numbers changed. You didn't have to need 60 votes anymore to get a confirmation through legislation. You know, it is, again, folks, very telling. Now, I want to go to your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. Let's go to Steve in Washington State on line one. Steve, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. Hey, I was listening to a comment that Sean made, and I think we easily fall into very carefully crafted liberal talking points, and that particular one was that Trump was a divisive president. But I don't think that's the case. I think he attacks politicians, but he does not attack the people. And it's the class warfare of the Democrats that divides people. I was at a rally.
Yeah, I think. Listen, politics has become extremely divisive. I think that's what Sean was saying. Is that it is, and you've got, when you are on the conservative side, it is not just. And Rick Grenell was just talking about this. It is not like Republicans versus Democrats. This is what they're both trying to get to, Steve. And they both have a ton of experience, and like I do. I mean, they've worked in the political side, the campaign side, the campaign party side, like at the RNC. They've done the press side. Rick all making his way all the way to a cabinet position. Is that it's not so much now Republican versus Democrat that's the big divisive thing. It's the insiders versus the outsiders, and Trump is seen as the outsider. So the insiders, and there, as Rick said, there are plenty of Republicans in that group. Some Republicans you might even support, they might have policy positions you like, but they don't like these outsiders coming into Washington and shaking things up or, quote, draining the swamp. I think that's what we're getting to. It's not that President Trump himself goes out there just to try and be divisive for divisive sake. The media builds that narrative and the left builds that narrative. But let's all be honest. This is going to be a very divisive election. We all know that. I mean, this has been pretty tough, pretty nasty. And it's not just the candidates. It's, you see communities, families, the debates going on amongst people. I mean, that's how you know it's really divisive. Should it always be that way? Well, I mean, it's a presidential election where you have two clear choices of very different paths to take the country down. One is to continue on a path of the President Trump has laid out. The other is to really revert back to the Obama years and go further to the left than President Obama was even able to do. That's kind of the choice people have. And that's pretty different. So what does that mean? It means if you're on one of those sides and you really believe it, and you're on the other side and you really believe it, well, there's a pretty big division between there. Now, there are a lot of voters who are still trying to figure all that out because, see, they get so much division, and they just want to know about how is this going to affect me, not just your political talking points. That's the key group, I think, in this election, and it's a dwindling number of people. It's a dwindling number of people, but they still have a very important role to play in these election cycles. Again, to talk to us on air. In our final segment coming up, we'll get to Diane. I'll get to you first. We'll take more of your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. You know, we're going to have this time, I think, to really start looking at, because I think day to day, there's going to be more and more politics. Just every day, when you wake up, you're going to see it. When you're going to sleep, you're going to see it throughout the day. And that's normal. But now we're inundated with it with so many different ways. But what are you picking up? You know, if you're early voting, if you're in one of those battleground states like Diane is in North Carolina, that we're going to go to in the next segment, and I'm going to ask her, you know, what is it like on the ground there? Because that is what becomes key in these final few weeks. Are you seeing not just the candidate occasionally comes to one part of the state and does a rally, but are there the volunteers out? Are there are you seeing the people early voting? If they're allowing that in your state, if there's in-person voting, things like that, what are you picking up from your friends, from your family? It's kind of like one of those questions. If the election was right now, and we know in politics that we still have 18 days. I mean, that is like 6 months or a year when you're talking about a presidential election. But with early voting and mail-in voting, it's a little bit different than in the past because it's not like everybody's going to be voting on November 3rd. So I'd love to hear from you about what you think is happening on the ground. 1-800-684-3110. On this Friday, it's your turn to provide us info about what's happening on the ground politically. We'll be right back.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today. aclj.org.
All right, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. We are to your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. What a broadcast we've had today. If you missed some of the broadcasts, you got friends and family, if you're watching on Facebook and Periscope right now, make sure you share the broadcast today. You can actually share it at the end of the broadcast because we keep it up. And then people could see that we had, you know, Sean Spicer on in studio. He was talking about a lot of things, including the election, but also his new book, which is out this week. It's available now. It's called Leading America, President Trump's Commitment to People, Patriotism, and Capitalism. This is, again, Sean's brand new book. You can go to seanspicer.com. It was great to have him not just on the show, but in studio with us. And this is a book, again, it's right up into the election cycle. It's got the information that you need, so I encourage you to check that out. Then we were joined by our special advisor on national security and foreign policy to the ACLJ, Rick Rennell, a former cabinet member, on the censorship issue. I mean, this is, folks, it's coming loud and clear, and it's coming next week, we believe, that with the Twitter CEO who will be subpoenaed to testify before the Senate Judiciary Committee. So we'll be covering that next week as well, of course, with all the election stuff. We're not going to be ignoring that, certainly, on Jay Sekulow Live. But I want to go to Diane from North Carolina Online, too. Diane, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Jordan, thank you for taking my call. How are you doing today?
Great. Thanks, Diane.
Good, good. Hey, listen, you were talking about, you know, being in North Carolina. It's funny, as I'm driving down the road, there's now a plane flying overhead with a huge banner trailing off the back of it saying, vote early. So, you know, that's one of the things going on here in Charlotte. Charlotte is very Democratic.
Right.
Many, many more signs for Biden-Harris. But one of the things that I had called about is the fact of what you were talking about earlier, Jordan, with the big tech companies and censoring. And they had absolutely no problem during the whole impeachment, the Russiagate thing. They had no problem putting things out and allowing people to post things. But as you said, they're protecting their own. And now that this whole story, which seems to be verifiable, is out about Hunter Biden and Joe Biden's ties and all these other things, they don't want that out.
No, they don't want things out. They don't want the news out about certain people. If it was leaked documents from whatever source, but it was hurting President Trump or Republican running the Senate or the House or for a state position, they'd put it up. And if they didn't know if it was verified, they would just say it's alleged or these are believed to be emails. These are believed to be documents that are correct. We're in the process of verifying. We verified to the extent we could possible. And now, you know, leave it up to then the person to have to respond to. None of us would be surprised by that, would we? No. What we have been a little shocked by, but we shouldn't be anymore, is that when it's about the other side, it's not like the mainstream news just ignores the story. They've been doing that for years. Okay, we're used to that, right? They just don't even cover it. But now they're using Twitter and Facebook and social media platforms to literally shut the story down so that you can't get it anywhere. And that's what happened. And now Twitter has announced this new policy that they're not going to do. They're going to do more labeling and not take stories down specifically. But I don't think that's enough to stop their CEO from having to testify and be subpoenaed. And again, that's still them meddling. And the way they wrote the statement, people say they're gonna label reports that come from hacks. How do they know that? How do they know if it's something is hacked versus leaked? You know, I mean, leaked documents that come out are the person who leaked it committed a crime, and it may have committed, especially like a government document, someone's personal records like tax returns, things like that. If those get leaked, the person who leaked it committed a crime. Now the news outlet gets some protections, But who's determining what is a leak versus a hack? I mean, how does Twitter or Facebook know that, unless someone says, this was hacked? I mean, think about that. And then are people just going to claim they were hacked? Because that's what Steve Scully was doing at C-SPAN. And I don't like beating up on C-SPAN, but certainly the Presidential Debate Commission deserves some beating up on. And Steve Scully shouldn't have just been suspended. He should have been fired. He was going to moderate a presidential debate, and he was lying about his Twitter account being hacked. I mean, think about that. That's the world we live in. Everyone rushed to defend him. Rushed to defend him. Even though it's absurd. He's not 12 years old. And the hacks wouldn't make sense. Why would what he was writing that he said was hacked was not like some like weird statement. It wasn't like something that was obviously like cursing or something that he would never say. It was inappropriate questions to someone about how to handle one of the people who was going to be in the debate. It happened to be, of course, President Trump. But they said, no, he's telling the truth. Not now, though. Now, when they actually got into it, I guess, figured out that he was never hacked at all. But they suspended him. So will he reappear in a year or two? And there he is. He's back. Yeah, I don't know. Let's go take more of your phone calls. Michael in Georgia, this is very interesting because I'm seeing long lines, too, for early voting. Hey, Michael, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Well, let me tell you, I got there at 8 o'clock when it opened.
Yep.
I was already like the number 250 in line.
Wow.
People have been there since 6:30. It took me 6 hours and 50 minutes to get from where I was at in line to vote.
Wow.
They had 12 booths to vote, and they closed 6 of them because of the coronavirus stuff.
You say you're in Douglas County, Georgia. I'm from Atlanta, so I mean I understand where you're talking about where you're from. But if they have 12, you would think, Michael, and this is something I think states need to figure, because they need to see what's happening with early voting, and then imagine what is going to happen on Election Day. And be prepared for it. So if you've got 12 working voting booths, figure out how to socially distance them correctly so that you're following the CDC guidelines, everything and all that's good, so that those 12 machines, right, Michael, can be open. Because, I mean, a lot of people, they couldn't, if you got young children, I mean, if I didn't really plan that day out, which is like an entire day, they can't just wait in line.
Yeah, people were going out and buying lunch and bringing it back for everybody.
I mean, that is just that. I mean, in one sense, I mean, I like to see people turning out to vote. I think that that's really cool. I think that it's cool that people will even wait in line 6 hours to vote. In the United States, we should do a better job of that, though. I mean, like if there's 12 voting machines, like he's talking about, figure out how to get all 12 open. And I want to keep talking to people, you know, throughout these next couple of weeks where there's early voting. About your experiences with that, because that used to be the way you could kind of, again, if you already had made up your mind and you knew who you wanted to vote for and nothing was going to kind of change that, this early voting was pretty simple. And usually you'd go in there, you might wait for 5-10 minutes, especially early on, because these people are calling about the early voting that's just opening up in the last day or two, and people are rushing to early vote. Maybe just to get it done, because they're worried that, like they keep telling you, what if it all shuts down and you didn't get an absentee ballot or something, right? Or something like that. So people like feel like they need to get their vote in now. And I encourage you, I'm driving by every day, and if I see it, I've got time, I'm stopping and I'm gonna go in and vote. And I'll let you know by wearing the sticker the next time I do it. We'll talk to you on Jay Sekulow Live.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.